Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Today, we welcome the medical director of Northwestern Medicine's Immediate Care, Dr. Sindhu Anderson, to our broadcast. Doctor, good to have you with us. Let's start by finding out about COVID and what's the latest on that new variant. What are you seeing?
Good morning. Good morning. We are seeing a bit of an increase or uptick in COVID cases here at the Immediate Care. We're seeing people coming in, you know, with the typical COVID symptoms that we've seen throughout the pandemic, you know, cough, chest congestion, nasal congestion, things like that.
And is this the result of holiday gatherings, or is something else at play here?
Well, right now there is a dominant variant that's essentially in the community, JN.1, that we're seeing, and that's affecting this, that's essentially causing this uptick of cases. We also can attribute, you know, holidays, travel, you know, people are indoors much more frequently to, you know, kind of attribute to this little bit of an uptick as well.
Is the new variant just as contagious as the last one? Any difference?
I would say it's pretty similar. You know, these variants, the virus mutates in an effort to continue to essentially survive in the community. So we are seeing it's fairly, you know, similar in terms of contagiousness. We are seeing people who have, you know, been vaccinated and boosted getting the infection. They're not necessarily as severe as, you know, without getting the vaccine, but we are seeing, you know, it is spreading fairly quickly, and the wastewater is showing that as well.
Is the current vaccine effective against this new variant?
Yes, it's effective in terms of preventing any severe progression of COVID and preventing hospitalization. So that is very good news. So we still would encourage people to get vaccinated and boosted if they haven't already.
Is there also more flu going around now than there has been recently?
Yes, yes. We are seeing a bit of an increase in flu cases as well. So people are coming in, you know, with body aches, fevers, similar symptoms to COVID, cough, congestion as well. But yeah, we are seeing a bit of an increase in flu, influenza A and B.
Adults and children?
Yes, unfortunately both. The good news is, though, if you are someone who qualifies or come in early in your course of illness, we can do oral medication for flu, which would be Tamiflu, to help, you know, decrease the length and severity of it.
How do you know if you have, short of testing, how do you know if you've got COVID or flu?
Generally, the symptoms do tend to overlap quite a bit. With influenza, we tend to see more fevers and body aches more than with COVID. We tend to see people's heart rate be a little bit higher as they're, you know, trying to fight off this fever. So generally, that would be one of the clues that we'd see to kind of lead us down the influenza thought process there.
I was reading about the rising flu cases, especially among young children in the Southeast and West. What's the situation here in the Midwest?
In the Midwest, we are seeing a bit of an increase. I believe the flu cases are still increasing from the previous weeks. We haven't seen this week's data from the Chicago Department of Health, but it's still like around 10% or slightly a little bit higher, but we're not seeing these large increases that we've seen, you know, in years past, but we are seeing it going up.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about weight loss. This is the time of year people are trying to keep their resolutions, and there's a lot to talk about here. First, Ozempic. And what is the deal with that if you stay on it?
Generally, with Ozempic, it's a GLP-1 medication. It's in that class of medications, which is a newer class of medications. What that medication does is it decreases, it essentially allows you not to eat as much, keeps you full longer, which generally will help with weight loss. So people are tending to see people who have a lot of success with this medication. If you're someone who qualifies, so if your BMI is over 25 and you have another concurrent illness like high blood pressure, diabetes, or if your BMI is over 30, those are the current recommendations right now. And that requires a doctor's or a provider's prescription to an evaluation prior to getting on the medication.
How safe is it, and how long should one be on it for weight loss?
Currently, the FDA has approved it for safety and for long-term use. Right now, we are not really seeing, there are side effects to these medications and there are risks. People have talked about intestinal obstruction. Those are the big things that we're seeing coming out, these reports, gastroparesis, where, you know, the food is just kind of like in your stomach and not really moving through. In terms of the and how long to be on it, what we're seeing is, you know, obesity is a lifelong illness, and this medication is likely something you need to be on for a long period of time. There are physicians and groups that tend to wean people off after a certain amount of time once these lifestyle modifications are fully adapted by the individual. But the anticipation is people may need to be on this these meds long term, particularly if you're diabetic.
Doctor, as you know, in November, the FDA approved Eli Lilly's diabetes drug. It's called Zepbound. They approved it for obesity. And what do you know about this? When is it available to people, and how does it compare to Ozempic?
Yes. Generally, with Zepbound, it was previously currently already on the market and under another name, Mounjaro, which is pretty much used for type 2 diabetes. At this point, and people are tolerating it pretty well. Its results from studies have shown that it's even more effective than Ozempic, as it works on two receptors, GIP and GLP, and people tend to lose more weight from it in the studies, and generally pretty well tolerated as is Ozempic. We tend to see it, I believe it's already on the market. But yeah, it works very similarly to Ozempic, but people are seeing better results with it, slightly better results.
I heard there's something like 70 new obesity treatments in development, six or seven now awaiting regulatory review. So this is going to be the big trend in this new year, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you can label something as like a blockbuster drug, this definitely would be, it would qualify. And given how predominant it is, and you know how often I'm asked about it by patients, and you know, obesity really is a big problem, and it's a big preventable problem in the United States. So if we have a tool to kind of help us combat that, would be that's helpful for us. It's helpful for our patients.
Intermittent fasting has come up as a topic here lately, and a lot of people using that method to lose weight. And I recall always hearing breakfast is the most important meal, keep eating every few hours to stoke your metabolism. But now we're not saying that anymore, are we? what's the latest?
Yeah, generally, with intermittent fasting, that's usually, you know, just simply an eating pattern. You're still eating, and the goal is to still eat, you know, like high protein, low sugar, like type of meals. But with intermittent fasting, with these patterned eating, what we're seeing is when you don't eat for a while, several things can happen to your body. Your hormone levels change to make the fat, like body fat, more accessible, and it starts like cellular repair process. So like these studies are showing that it can be effective to lose weight and just help with that those hormones in your body at a cellular level.
Mm-hmm. So what do I do? Do I call you and ask you when it's okay to eat? How do I do this?
Well, a typical pattern that we're seeing that people have found to be, you know, doable and effective is 16 hours of fasting and 8 hours in an 8-hour window where they eat. So 16 hours means typically most people will eat an earlier dinner and don't really start eating until lunch the following day.
Mm-hmm. So, and if you have coffee or tea, you can't put any sugar or milk or cream in there, right?
Yeah, you can do coffee or tea. Yeah, just no, you know, additives like that that can cause your sugar to spike and things.
And before we let you go, there's a lot of talk about what happened to Connor Bedard and the broken jaw, and we're hearing he'll be out anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. How is that treated? And when you have a fractured jaw, it's just milkshakes and soup for a while, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, typically with conservative treatment, it's treated with, you know, really rest, like rest, Motrin, cold packs, things like that. Most people tend to recover in that 4 to 8 weeks mark. If you've lost teeth, you know, they can take a little bit longer to replace them. But some people, you know, if you require surgery, that requires like wiring of the jaw, and that can be a 3 to 6 month, you know, process.
Of course, when you're 19 years old, you probably heal a lot quicker than the rest of us, right?
Well, yeah, things tend to probably move a bit quicker. You probably, tend to do pretty well.
Well, let's hope he does pretty well. Dr. Sindhu Anderson, thank you very much from Northwestern Medicine Immediate Care, and we'll talk to you next week.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Have a great day.
You too. And we've got the news coming up on the hour from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.